This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The views expressed by guests on this program do not necessarily represent the views of the host or owners of the Doggy Diva Show and do not necessarily constitute endorsement of products. Medical information discussed by guests on this program are those of the guests and is only for informational purposes and should not replace medical advice by your local veterinarian professional.
Hi, this is Susan Marie from the Doggy Diva Show. Do you know how to protect your pets from canine influenza? We have some answers. Have you ever heard of Esther the Wonder Pig? It's a story that'll warm your heart. What you should know about National Pet Fire Safety Day. That's what's on our show today. Stay tuned.
Hey, did you hear that? What is that?
It's the bark heard round the world. The Doggy Diva Show. Here's Susan Marie.
Welcome everyone to the Doggy Diva Show, the show for animal lovers. I am your host, Susan Marie, and as always, I am joined by my canine co-hosts, the Doggy Divas themselves, Francesca, Coco, and our newest little diva, Miss Olive. Thank you for joining us today as we bring the experts in the pet and animal world right to you. So go grab a cup of coffee and your pet's favorite treat, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You know that feeling when you go to clean the litter box and it's a complete disaster? Yeah, we've got you covered. Introducing World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the advanced litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. Zero Mess combines the concentrated power of corn with superabsorbent plant fibers. Translation, scoop once and you're done. Find it at a pet store near you and save $2. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Hey, Monica. There's something going around and it's not really good. And I think that everybody everywhere is worried about this. So could you fill us in on what's going on with that canine influenza?
Yes. So canine influenza has actually been around for a little while, but we have a newer strain that is having outbreak issues around the U.S. right now. So canine influenza, their two main strains are H3N8, and then the newer strain, which is an Asian version of the influenza, is H3N2. Now, this presents, you know, kind of similar to coughing, sneezing, respiratory issues. Highly, highly contagious. It started popping up in Atlanta, Chicago. Now we've had a lot of outbreaks here in Florida. So we're really trying to educate all of the pet owners about the vaccines, about the disease, and really how to prevent your dog from getting it. One thing that I've noticed in a lot of these outbreaks, you know, you have them at, you know, kennels and things of that nature, but you know, Doc had kind of mentioned this a while ago, and it kind of clicked with me, and every location that has had major outbreaks has kind of coincided with a major airport hub. And it makes sense because dogs are traveling, they're coming in, you know, it's getting into the area, and then you're having, you know, major outbreaks. So just something to think about and kind of be cautious of. Right now, you know, the Southwest, you know, of the U.S. is all, you know, all the states in the Southwest have become affected, or have had infected cases. So the thing about influenza is the high contagibility. The dog comes down with canine influenza. There's a quarantine time of 30 days because they're actively shedding the disease for a bare minimum of 21 to 23 days. And because of the exact, you know, time frame that they got in it, then it's an incubation for 30 just to make sure you're covered for that time. You're on antibiotics that entire time. And I always tell clients to be very cautious. And we have, I don't know if you noticed it when you came in, but there's signs in the front of the office. if you have a pet that is coughing, they have to be seen literally outside of the office at this point to make sure that it is not influenza before they come in, because you have to literally shut down the entire office. The office has to be quarantined, cleaned. It's highly, highly contagious. So you can have, you know, a lot of people think, oh, you know, coughing, kennel cough, Bordetella type stuff. My dog's not going to the dog daycare. They're not going to the dog park. I really don't need it. Not the case with this, you know, particular influenza strains. Nymphomites, and what they breathe, it's aerosolized for at least 20 feet. So you could be, you know, walking on the opposite side of the road from a dog that's coughing, or have, you know, a decent sized proximity and still have the opportunity of becoming infected from the disease. So just, you know, as a precaution, pets that are doing doggy daycare, dog parks, behavioral classes, dog shows, particularly dog shows, because they've had a lot of outbreaks at dog shows. Greeting other dogs at parks, any dog-friendly events, anything. We're recommending that every dog owner get vaccinated for the disease. And like I said, there are two strands, and there's actually some of the vaccine manufacturers have different vaccines for each strand, but Merck actually has a influenza vaccine that covers both strands. So that's only, you know, one set. Just like any other vaccine, the first time they see it, they have to be boosted 3 to 4 weeks later. So there's not going to be, a one shot and done thing. After the initial vaccine, where you get the first injection and then the second injection 3 to 4 weeks later, it's once a year after that. But initially, just like, you know, a puppy getting a new thing, your immune system has to kind of, you know, come up to par with it. So there is a two shot series. Besides that, I mean, once they get the injection, they're covered against the disease, and it's so highly contagious. We definitely recommend everybody vaccinate their dog for influenza.
Well, Monica, you mentioned how, and the doc did mention this, that it tends to be higher in airport hub areas. So if people are traveling, and a lot of people travel with their pets, it's definitely something that they should speak to the veterinarian about getting that if they plan on traveling this summer. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing we see, you know, even locally here, is that some boarding facilities will have the pet owners get their dogs their kennel cough and Bordetella vaccines every 6 months, even though the vaccines are labeled to last 1 year. But they're not requiring the pets to have influenza yet. I think once you start getting more facilities that are having these issues, you're going to see it's going to become a requirement anywhere. Just like, you know, Bordetella is to bring your pet in anywhere. It's going to become a requirement everywhere you go. It's just not quite there yet. The issue is, you don't want your dog to be the reason why these places instill that mandatory, you know, decision to, you know, it's very contagious. It lasts a long time. It's, you know, obviously not going to be cheap if you're having to keep them quarantined for 30 days, which you can do at home. But if you have multiple pets, that's, you know, antibiotics, it's doctor visits. There's, you know, breathing issues that can go along with the congestion and the, you know, the sinus. It's not a quick, easy antibiotic fix. It's going to be time consuming. It's probably not going to be low cost, and it's something that's completely avoidable with the vaccine.
This is one of those things where an ounce of prevention, so, and where it's going on nationwide, it's something that everybody should really talk to their vet about and really consider. And again, it's the canine influenza, and this is something that you should definitely look into, definitely speak to your veterinarian about, because it's something that can be prevented, and it's something that we all should be aware of, those of us that are dog owners, so.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants any additional information on influenza, they have a great website set up called, it's www.canineinfluenza.com. And they have a lot of information in there around the disease, the infectious states, and also, you know, vaccines and preventatives that, you know, you can get for your dog.
As always, Monica, you bring us the greatest tips. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Coming up, You've just got to meet Esther, the Wonder Pig, who could change your life.
Well, she's sitting curled up on my lap as we speak. Beautiful Bella's my long-haired Dachshund. She was thrown out of a pickup truck going 30 miles an hour, and she disappeared into the woods with the wild animals, boars and coyotes. About 4 weeks later, she just appeared as she was a mess. Her fur was matted. She scratched almost nonstop. My friend suggested that I order this stuff called Dinovite.
Dinovite .com.
859-428-1000.
She gobbles it up. She has been itch-free ever since, and her fur is gorgeous. Anyone out there who has a rescue dog, start them on a Dinovite diet for at least a 90-day period. They bond better with the people who take good care of them. They are going to be your buddy for a very, very long time.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. Dinovite.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. And as you all know, Miss Olive in Suncoast Pet Magazine has her favorite things. And one of her favorite things was Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time. Best-selling authors Steve Jenkins and Derek Walker, along with Caprice Crane, share the entertaining story of Esther the Wonder Pig, the social media superstar and friend to so many, along with a moving tale of how loving families really do come in all shapes and sizes. And Olive and I loved reading about the funny, charming, attractive, very fashionista, inspiring Esther, as well as Steve and Derek's adventure from reluctant pig parents to farm-owning advocates for animals. Yay! It's no wonder that millions love Esther, and Miss Olive and I are in that group. And she is a true phenom, and it's inspiring, love-filled. The message is all around the world. So we are so happy to have one of Esther's parents. We have Steve Jenkins. He's co-author of the book. Welcome, Steve. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Now, before we start talking about that beautiful Esther, I'd like to talk about your life, you and Derek's life before Esther.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just a real estate agent, and Derek is a magician. We've been together for, God, we're almost 18 years now, which is crazy. At the time, it was about 15 years before Esther arrived. 14 years, somewhere around there. And yeah, I mean, other than that, we were really just kind of a typical family. I mean, it was the two of us. We had two dogs, two cats. We didn't have any kids, any human children anyway. You know, we traveled a lot. We hung out with friends all the time. It was really a very typical and normal lifestyle, I tell people.
So now, how did you come upon adopting Esther?
Well, I've always had a thing for animals. I'd come home with a cat about a year before Esther arrived. She was living in a barn. That's Dolores, one of the cats. You'll see her on our Facebook pages occasionally. Mm-hmm. And she was a barn cat. And I went to feed all of these kittens that I knew were in this barn. And I noticed this little runt hiding that wasn't getting any food at all. And that was Dolores. And I wouldn't leave until I caught her. I caught her and I took her home. Derek didn't know it. We were getting a cat, and I got in a world of trouble and built that bridge. And not 12 months later did I get a message about a mini pig that needed a home. And pretty much the same thing happened. I agreed to bring this mini pig home before telling Derek, trying to come up with the appropriate story. I was actually supposed to go away that weekend. So I was like, oh, well, I'll pick up Esther and tell him I found her on my way home and had no choice, you know, but to come home with this mini pig. But things changed the minute I saw her. She looked terrible. She had nail polish on her nails. It was all chipped and this ratty collar and sunburn on her ears. And I just couldn't bear to take her away and put her in a hotel room while I was away for a weekend. So I canceled the trip, went home that night, and had to immediately explain to Derek that we were now the parents of a pig. So it was a pretty intense pretty intense first meeting. Very colorful language was exchanged, let's say that.
I have to tell you, Steve, I could in reading the book, I could totally relate to you because I bring in a lot of, like, you know, disabled rescue pets, and I hide them in the back room, or my husband will be out and he'll go in the back room to, like, put equipment away and stuff, and he'll go, "What's in the bed back there?" And I was totally relating to you in the book, and I go, "Oh, I totally get where he's coming from."
Oh, totally. That's exactly what I did with Esther. Uh-huh. I put her in a back room in the house, and the
exactly.
dogs were laying out the door. And that's what gave me away.
I wanted
to tell him we had a pig before he saw her, but my plan was immediately foiled. Mm-hmm. I should have known then that none of this was going to go to plan, really. I mean, it didn't go to plan from the second I got her.
But that's how things always work out best. That's how I always find out. So
exactly.
I gotta ask, how much did she weigh when you first found her, when she first came into your lives?
She couldn't have been more than 5 pounds.
Mm.
She was really little. She was about maybe 12 inches, 10 to 12 inches from snout to tail.
Wow.
And she stood about 8 inches tall, like I said, 4 to 5 pounds. So there was not a shadow of doubt in my mind, you know, based on what I'd been told by the girl I got her from, that she was 6 months old and she'd be 70 pounds when she was full grown. And seeing how big she was, and, you know, it never even crossed my mind that she would be any bigger than this girl told me. She was tiny. You know, she was every bit a mini pig when I first saw her.
And as time went on, and happy belated birthday to Esther, how much does Esther weigh now?
She weighs now about 630 pounds. She peaked at about, I think, 680 was the heaviest
wow.
she ever was. Because we didn't know pig health. You know, we thought she was
yeah.
healthy and had an expert come that said, she's pretty overweight. She didn't really look it. She looked round, as you'd think a pig would. But we found out that it actually wasn't correct. So she's been on a diet for about a year, and we altered the food that we give her. We have a pellet made for her now that's low in fat and high in fiber, lots of fresh fruit and veggies, and we've got her down to about 630, which is a very healthy weight for
that's
her.
That's great. And the fact mm-hmm. that you took her, and it's so ironic because I knew someone, I used to work in New York City, who actually, she lived in the village, and she had bought what she thought, she had adopted what she thought was what Esther was, a micro pig, and lived in an mm-hmm. apartment, a studio apartment in the village. And needless to say, she was not a micro pig. So, and this was years ago, and I was relating to your story and relating to my friend. Can you just tell this, what goes on? Because there's a lot of this that goes on, and you are now, you're an advocate. And I think that Esther helped bring you into your calling in your life.
Oh, definitely. And I'm sorry, I think I cut you off before you finished, but I hope you're going to ask me to tell you a little bit more about the myth of mini pigs. Is
yes,
that where you were going?
That's what
that?
I'm definitely going
Absolutely.
To, yeah.
Well, it's a huge issue. I mean, when you hear the word mini pig or micro pig, you just have this vision, you know, and you can't fault anybody for it, mm-hmm. of this tiny little pig that fits in a teacup. You know, that's what comes to mind when you think of micro.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trigger word that's been applied to a blank number of species. I think there's 4 or 5 different species of pig that are commonly bred as pets. All of them are called micro pigs and mini pigs. But these species of pig range from 70 pounds up to 250 or even 350 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're all called the same thing. They're interbred. So you could get a, you know, a Julian pig, which are these really little ones that are, you know, 30 to 70 pounds. They're tiny little pigs, and you breed it with a pot belly that, you know, is an average of 250 pounds. So it looks like a Julian, but it's going to weigh 175 to 200. You basically have no idea what you're getting.
Mm.
And anytime you go to somebody that I've spoken to anyway, the breeders get very, very defensive. And they say, well, you know, it's micro pigs. I pick micro pigs. And I'm like, no, you don't. You breed a certain type of pig. You just call it a micro pig. Well, they don't know. They can't tell you what kind of breed it is because they've been inbred so much. So it's just such a shot in the dark. And people go in with their expectations. You know, obviously ours is extreme. She didn't become 250 or even 300 pounds. She went right on up to over 600.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even when you're expecting a 70 or 150 pound animal, you know, to get them to 250 or 300 pounds is not at all what you're expecting. And there are a ton of work is the other thing too. People are not educated properly. Obviously we weren't. We did a lot of research on the fly, but we had no idea how smart pigs are or how much work they are, because it's like dealing with a toddler. You know, the terrible twos with human toddlers. Well, pigs have intelligence on par with human toddlers, but they're four times the size, you know, weighing 250 pounds, and they're perpetually at the terrible two stage. You know, Esther has been in the terrible twos as far as her behavior for the last 5 years. It's just the way they are. You know, and when you're not prepared for that, you've got to restructure your house and think about where you put things based on your pig or what you can have in the house based on your pig. It's not because they smell. They're, in fact, they have no odor at all. They're super clean. Goes outside to do all the washroom, all that sort of stuff, no problem at all. It's actually pig-proofing the house. That was the biggest challenge, and the people aren't prepared for it.
Well, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk and going through it in your book. As you pig-proofed your house, you kind of learned it on the fly.
We absolutely did. Well, we had no idea what we were doing, and we weren't vegan when Esther first came along. I know we're kind of jumping ahead. We haven't talked about that yet.
No, because I wanted to definitely touch on that. Yeah.
So, you know, we were totally on our own. We were just two guys with two dogs that all of a sudden had a pig in the house. So what do you do with it, right? Well, we've raised dogs. That's how we'll raise the pig. You know, again, for those first few weeks, thinking that she was only going to be 70 pounds, right? Not knowing what was actually happening. So we were just training her like a dog. You know, we took her outside all the time to go to the bathroom, positive reinforcement, teaching her to sit, teaching her all those things. And it was fine. You know, apparently it's not how most people train a pig, but, you know, it worked for us, but we had no choice but to learn on the fly because we didn't have a circle of friends to lean on that were expert pig parents. And there's very, very little information out there about how to raise a pet pig or very little reputable information anyway at the time. So it was a real challenge. So we were, very much on our own. And we also had to deal with the fact Esther was illegal where we lived. There were bylaws against her, which I knew when I got her, but I was like, well, you know, 70 pounds, we can deal with that. You know, we can deal with that. We can keep her a secret. So, you know, we were trying to keep her quiet. We didn't take her out all that much. We'd take her for walks at night and that sort of thing, leash, to get her used to walking on the leash. Again, trying to train her like one of the dogs. But we wanted to kind of keep it quiet. We had no choice but to keep her quiet. So yeah, Derek and I just did it on our own and learned as we went in trial and error and, you know, got it figured out.
Well, and it's kind of funny. I was in the book, there was a portion of the book where up where you live, Canada, you had the ice storm and how everything, like it was like a whole, and we have hurricanes down here, so I could totally relate to that. And it's like when you plan for something and it totally goes totally the opposite. I was like going, oh my gosh, I could so relate to this, but it's, you know, I have it with a house full of dogs and some cats, but you have it with Esther, and it was amazing how you guys all made it work, and you lived in a house. And
yes.
It was terrible. And you had no electricity, you had no power, you had nothing, and I was like, wow, this is, you know, it was such a transition. And to see you go through the almost like survival mode. But I mean, if you guys could get through that, you can get through anything. And then I was like, oh man, they're going to get through everything now. But then to go through that, and then you went into making the, I guess you went into a mindset that we really need to go into like a larger place and get into like more of a farm atmosphere, which is where you go into the sanctuary. So maybe you could take us into there.
Yeah, well, the idea for the sanctuary came when, after we had gone to the vet, like that's when we found out that Esther was not, in fact, a mini pig. He found out because of her tail, that she was going to be a full-size commercial pig. And obviously, immediately, we thought, well, my God, we can't stay where we are forever. You know, this is going to change things. We'll get a small piece of land in the country and go do our own thing.
And can we just touch on the tail? Because they crop the tail, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The crop tail is clear indication to anybody that knows anything about pigs, where they've come from or what their background is, because it's such a common practice in commercial farms.
Yeah.
And it's because they're housed in very tight spaces. Pigs love to explore and to root. I mean, here on the property, Esther walks, you know, probably a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles a day, depending on what's going on. She loves to explore and root and dig. But in commercial farms, pigs are kept indoors in stalls with, you know, 20 or 30 other pigs. All they can do is eat and fight with each other. Mm. And tails are usually the first thing to go and get bitten. So they're often cut off when they're piglets. Esther's tail is about maybe an inch and a half long. We have a few pigs at the sanctuary without crop tails, and their tails are about a foot long. So it looks drastically different. It's really, really sad. Yeah. But that's how we knew that she was a commercial pig. And yeah, the bigger that she got, you know, and we did have some training issues as she got larger, and we started with a litter box expecting her to stay small, but for obvious reasons, the litter box is not practical for a 600-pound animal that lives in your house. So we had to undo all that training, which created a nightmare, as you can imagine, you know, trying to mm-hmm. tell an animal that's been teaching to use a litter box for months and then just taking it away and saying, okay, no, we're going to do this now. So imagine what was happening. It was awful. And you know, we did at times consider what we might have to do. You know, can we keep her? Can we do this? And that's when we learned farm sanctuaries existed. We'd never heard of them before. And we were looking for alternate homes for her. But even then, we weren't satisfied. We knew we couldn't get rid of her. And we were going to move. You know, we had kind of accepted the fact that at some point we're going to have to move. And that was it until I decided to start a Facebook page for her, because we had accepted the fact, like I said, we were keeping her. We would just move. We were dealing with this. Everything was finally getting settled, but we still had this fact. We lived in a town where she was illegal. So I didn't show her to friends on social media. We didn't kind of parade her around so everybody knew we had her. So I thought I'd start a Facebook page and kind of separate her from us. It would allow me to post pictures of her online, invite friends and family that were a little bit further away that didn't come to visit to see her and see what it was all about. You know, I talk on the phone and I tell them about her, but they really didn't get it. So I thought that would be how I could do it and kind of keep us apart from it. But the page went viral, and it went from nothing to 100,000 likes in, I think it was 80 days. And it was absolute chaos. And our, you know, cover was blown. Everybody all of a sudden knew where we were and that we had her and where we lived. And so now our plan to move eventually was, okay, we need to move now. And with the popularity online and everybody kind of, you know, rallying and pushing behind us, we thought, well, why don't we see the opportunity to not just move quietly on our own, but maybe open a farm sanctuary. And we presented it to the page, started the crowdfunding campaign. They were hugely supportive when we first presented the idea. So we started this crowdfunding campaign and raised $440,000 Canadian in 60 days to buy the farm and open Happily Ever Esther Farm Sanctuary. It was a wild, wild year. Like, nobody knew we had her to this crazy Facebook page to raising all this money to moving all within 12 months. It was insane.
And you know, you have this huge Facebook family, and everybody came together, and you had the mystery match donor. I mean, it seemed like so many things were coming together. It's like everything was meant to be, and your lives were being altered, and it was all happening I'm going to say this, like a higher good. Like, everything was happening, and Esther came into your life for a reason. It's like all very... It's all very, you know, good. And one of the things...
It's the craziest thing, yeah.
And one of the things, too, that came out of this and was, you'd mentioned vegan earlier, it's because I honestly think people look at Esther and they go, well, wait a minute, do I really want to have that piece of bacon? Or, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I think Esther, because of her loving, cute, sweet little way, and...
Yep.
She's just kind of like changing the way people look at some of their food and maybe going to more of a plant-based food, which, you know, you did touch on in the book. And I have to tell you something, mm-hmm. Steve. You wrote about something in the book, and there was a couple. I think they were an older couple. And the wife was a vegan, and the husband was not. And he was a carnivore, and they were grocery shopping. And I hope I'm remembering this correctly. And he was ahead of her in the aisle, and they left, and he didn't pick up the meat. And when they got in the car, she said that, in fact, I'm probably going to get all teary-eyed. He said one word to her when they got in the car, and he just said, Esther. And that was it. And it just, that to me showed the power of how a sweet, gentle, just as this loving being is here for a reason to show what she could do and how it can affect people in the most sincere, genuine way.
100%. I mean, before we met her, if you would approach me on the street and say, hey, you know, I'd like to discuss veganism with you, I would have turned and ran as fast as I possibly could, because I had this misconception in my mind of what it meant to be vegan. Not only that you could only eat seeds and lettuce, but B, the type of person that was a vegan, you know, and seeing it as very extreme and very judgmental, and I'm just not that person. And so I avoided it at all costs, despite the fact that I could not look into one of those trucks if I was on the highway. You know, I knew in my heart what was going on, but I at the same time, you know, I'd look down or put the visor across so I didn't see the cows or the pigs in the truck and get off the next exit to get my burger. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it was this weird wall that I had built up. And A, about being vegan and about eating animals, and the other part about vegans themselves. And then Esther came along. And she made us question everything. It wasn't a matter of, well, I don't think I can be vegan. It was a matter of, well, I can't eat her. You know, I just can't do it. So it wasn't really a choice as much as we just had to do it, you know, and that was kind of how it started. Well, that's it. We're not eating bacon or pork anymore, you know, the obvious choice. And with that came the idea to start looking at kind of what her life would have been like and what was learning a little bit more about her. And then that's what really opened our eyes, because we started looking for the information that we had, you know, in a nutshell, dedicated our lives to avoiding. You know, and looking away from what happens to the animals in slaughterhouses and in the farms. She made us kind of want to look at that for her benefit, you know, because we had her in our face. And that was what made us take those next steps. But it was her and her alone that initially made us start to question things. And so as the page was taking off and we saw that it was kind of taking on this vegan tone, Derek and I were thinking, well, how can we be the most effective? You know, vegans get it. Vegans get the message. So if we're just going to push out a vegan message, the people watching it are probably just going to be vegans, because I, as a non-vegan, did everything I could to avoid the vegan message. So we thought we need to be able to show her to people like us and to let what happened to us happen to them, which is just getting to know her and seeing her personality and seeing what she does every day, whether it's just sleeping in her bed or begging for food in the kitchen or lying in her pool outside, basically all the exact same things that our dogs did, you know, that people would start to make that connection the same way that we did. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. You know, and just like that couple that you were describing, nobody said anything. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, her picture came to mind when he went to grab that pack of bacon. You know, and that was enough to put it down.
And I'm telling you, you're saying that to me, and I just got chills as you said it.
Yeah. No, it's pretty intense, and it's an amazing feeling to know that you can have that impact on somebody, and to do it in such an approachable way, because it's not just, you know, seniors or people like us, but kids too. You know, that she appeals to such a wide variety of people. She's got a real impact, and it's been really interesting to see that. I mean, yes, she has the obvious, well, I can't eat pigs anymore impact, which is amazing, but she's also, we're getting messages from people that are saying, you know, thank you for helping me with depression, or for, you know, showing my sons it's okay to have two dads, or, you know, making my mother with dementia smile. I hadn't seen her smile for months, you know. It's wild.
Such a simple thing. It's like your calling came, and you're touching so many people in so many different ways. You know, we were talking about the poor pigs, like that are in the other situation. And you know, I watch the videos, and I watch her running, and she's running.
Yeah,
it's she's just so sweet, and she runs along, or I watch her sleeping, and she smiles when she's sleeping. There's just such a simplicity in. And there's such a sweetness about it that's the gentle message, I think, that comes across, and the gentle message of your lifestyle, of what you're in your veganism. It's like a soft, gentle message. And I think that's what resonates with people. Now, in saying that, you have the Happily Ever Esther, the sanctuary, which you have other animals on there too. You know, you've impacted other type of animals' lives too, which I think that people see that also. And also in your book, you have, which you have online, your recipes. So you've sort of, you're yes. integrating people in a nice, gentle way, but you also have some yummy recipes. You want to just talk a little bit about the recipes you have available?
Absolutely. Well, because, again, there's that wall up around the word vegan,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so what we found was that people would send us a message and be like, oh my God, I don't think I could ever eat pork anymore. And rather than us jumping on them and saying, well, you know, what about cows and chickens and pigs and everything else, and you need to be vegan and blah, 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 blah. You know, we seized the moment of acknowledging the fact that they were ready to give up pork and saying, hey, that's amazing. You know, go and check out Esther's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of Esther-approved recipes over there that we think you'll love. And we left it like that. You know, we pushed them over there, used the Esther-approved, which is basically, there's no animal products whatsoever. But we call it Esther-approved because people will ask you to explain that. They'll say, well, what does Esther approved mean? Or they won't ask any questions at all. They'll just go. They'll be like, oh, okay. You know, if you're telling me there's recipes over there that don't have pork and I don't want pork, great, I'll go look. You know, if you'd said vegan, they might have been like, oh, God, you know, I'm looking for more than a lettuce for dinner.
Exactly.
You know, and maybe wouldn't have gone there. So we're just trying to remove barriers that we know exist. And I know it makes vegans irate when we say that because, you know, oh, you should be saying vegan and promoting veganism. And well, we do, but we promote it in a different way because as far as we're concerned, a lot of damage has been done to the vegan word. Whether it be true or false, there are misconceptions about it. I think a lot of them are misconceptions. Some of them are true. Vegans can be very judgmental. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a lot of them are misconceptions that people have built up over time to kind of protect themselves. Right, so they can keep eating meat and doing all these
Absolutely.
Things that they do. You
and
know, they come up
yes.
with reasons why they don't want to, or why they don't like it, or why vegans are crazy, and so that they can avoid it. So we are trying to take those walls down, you know, and trying to not, you know, dispel the misconceptions, but just to avoid them altogether. You know, why do I have to dedicate so much time to trying to tell people, oh, no, it's not like that, it's not like that. Well, forget that conversation. Let's just skip right over that and get right to the vegan recipes, and they won't even realize it right away. Who cares? They'll realize it eventually.
Exactly.
Of course they're going to know, but if you don't get them looking at things or trying things, and then saying, hey, by the way, you know that amazing pasta sauce you made, or those, you know, those broccoli, you know, or cauliflower buffalo wings that you made, you know, oh, by the way, they were vegan. Oh, wow. You know, hey, I never would have tried a vegan recipe, but I tried one and I actually liked it. You know, so that's kind of our method behind that. And that's why we created Esther's Kitchen and call it all Esther approved as a way to be very approachable and family friendly. And the kind of stuff that we present there is ultimately vegan junk food. You know, it's not ideal vegan food, but it is what people need, I think, to get their foot in the door. We're so used to comfort foods,
and that's,
you know, and
home style
stuff, easy things to make. And, you know, we all know that that's not healthy, but the vast majority of people, that's what they're eating anyway. So if that's what we need to do and to replicate to get people to open that vegan door, then do it. You know, don't argue with them and say, no, you need to be vegan and eating quinoa. You know, leave the quinoa off for now and let's show them an amazing vegan burger, you know, or let's show them an amazing vegan Philly cheesesteak sandwich. You know, let's show them that kind of stuff so that you understand that being vegan or being Esther approved or whatever you want to call it isn't about giving up everything that you love. It's just about making it a little bit differently. And if you can make it differently, still have what you love, and do things that are better for you, for the animals, and the environment, why wouldn't you do it? It all of a sudden becomes very logical. So that's kind of our whole approach to it. It seemed like the logical thing for us to do, and we think a lot of other people will agree when you can get them to look at it that way.
Absolutely.
It's just that you got to get them to start looking at it that way, and you're never going to get there if you're trying to tear down walls to take that next step. You
it's
know,
like kind of
so
like baby
work.
Steps, yes. And that's why I think it's wonderful the way you're presenting it and the way you're doing it, because Esther approved sort of is a gentle way of this little bitty Esther smile as she's sleeping. And I don't know, it's like a little nudge.
Yeah. Exactly, right? It encourages conversation.
Exactly.
You know, because, you know, where unfortunately a lot of preconceived notions and misconceptions exist about veganism and vegans. And it's sad and I think it's wrong, but I think we do have to acknowledge that they're there and try to work around them. So that's what we're doing.
One of the things I want to talk about too, speaking of talking about making big changes, is you have something big coming up in the spring.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we're super excited. Esther doesn't really do anything normally, you know, the way that everybody else does. Everything about what has happened to us in our sanctuary and Esther, the Wonder Pig, and all that stuff has been out of the ordinary, including the way that we fundraise for Happily Ever Esther Farm Sanctuary. You know, a lot of charities are just hands out for money all the time, right? And it can be exhausting for people. And we've got a bigger message here at the sanctuary, of course, and with Esther the Wonder Pig. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can, A, raise money for the sanctuary, but also further our message. And one of the things we decided to do was an Esther cruise. And so the Esther cruise basically takes all kinds of Esther fans from all over the world. Last year we had just under 200 people join us on a carnival cruise. And all of those 200 people then had access to an Esther-approved menu the whole week that we were away. There was vegan food all over the ship, including vegan cheese at their pizza place. And it was unbelievable. And we had guest speakers come on board. And we did a film screening. We showed an amazing documentary. And so, again, it's a way to bring people together. They're there because they're fans of Esther. They want to go on a holiday, have a good time. But it also gives us an opportunity to get those people into a confined space. I mean, let's be honest, we're on a ship in the middle of the ocean. So we've got your attention. And to spread the message that we're trying to get across to people, which is that, A, you can eat vegan and eat everything that you ate before. We're just doing it differently, that we can have fun. You know, we had a pub crawl one night. We had a beach party one night. Like I said, our guest speakers, who were amazing. One of them was the VP of Mercies for Animals Canada, Krista. She came and did a talk for us. This year coming, we've got actually Linda from Esther's Kitchen, Chef Linda.
Oh, how
our
cool.
Chef is going to be joining us. Yeah, so I mean, it's amazing. And it's a really cool opportunity to show also the rest of the passengers on the ship, which is really important because we don't take over the whole ship. But when you get a few hundred vegans, or as we like to say, of course, Esther approved, people on a ship, it promotes conversation and questions. And all of a sudden, you'll notice that you get a whole bunch of people that aren't part of your group showing up to the seminars to hear the guest speakers or coming to watch the documentary. You know, how many of those people do you think would have sat at home and say, hey, let me throw on this vegan documentary?
I know.
Right? But now all of a sudden we're attracting them and bringing them in because they're saying, oh, well, hey, that group's a blast. You know, they're the guys that we saw on the pup crawl last night. What are they doing today? Right?
So
it's really, really cool opportunity to, like I said, raise money for the farm, have a great time with Esther supporters that are taking a holiday anyway. You know, hey, might as well go on a cruise. You know, see the guys. Esther doesn't come. We do have to acknowledge that. She does not come on the cruise. It's
well,
just
she needs to rest up.
That's right. That's right. She's got to take care of the farm.
She has to take care of all of her peeps at the farm.
She's a very busy girl. So we found it to be a really amazing opportunity on a whole number of levels. And one of the other things that is really cool and kind of spinning off it is our hope to kind of get in with Carnival in a way that we can get these Esther-approved menus implemented on all their cruises, right? Because when you get non-cruise people, our people, for example, when we were on that ship, our 200 people, talking about how great our food is. And then you get people that aren't part of our group saying, well, hey, can I have that menu? You know, I want to see that Esther-approved menu. You know, all of a sudden that's getting passed around elsewhere in the dining room. And they're seeing that there is a demand for that as well. You know, so we're trying to get that implemented on all the cruises, not just our cruise. You know, so it's a really, really, really amazing opportunity to do a whole number of things. Most importantly, raising money for the farm. Secondly, spreading an amazing message and reaching another audience that you probably would never have been able to reach with most other forms of vegan, you know, advocating
yes.
and messaging. So, yeah, and there's always a method to our madness. People think we're crazy sometimes when we first
said,
oh, we're doing
a cruise. No, you're a good kind of crazy, Steve. Now, for people who want to learn, I mean, you have like millions of followers, but for people who may want to learn more about Esther, more about you and Derek, more about ways to, you know, contribute to the farm, or who want to learn more about the cruise, the Esther cruise, where can the listeners go?
Well, home base is we kind of have two home bases, I guess. Our website covers everything, and that's www.estherthewonderpig.com. And that covers links to all of our social media pages, and the Esther Cruz information's there, book information's there. There's little links for all of our other things, the sanctuary, Esther's kitchen, all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, our flagship social media page is Esther the Wonder Pig on Facebook. And we often post events there. For example, the Cruz has an event page on our Esther the Wonder Pig Facebook page. And we always keep that page very up to date with what's happening, you know, in the book as it was coming out, details on the cruise, all that sort of stuff. So that would be our flagship social media page for sure.
Well, I have to thank you. Number one, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Number two, I want to thank you for what you and Derek did, because I'm telling you, you changed not only, you know, Esther's life, but you've changed the life of probably millions of people. And when people click on that page too, you bring a smile to everybody's face. You change the way people live their lifestyle, their eating habits, the way that they look at animals and the way that they look at farm animals. And I believe there are no accidents in life. So that pretty girl came into your life for a reason. Miss Esther, the fashionista wonder pig.
It's the craziest thing. You know what? I've got one other interesting story for you. Something that was brought to our attention about 3 or 4 months after we started the Facebook page. And somebody asked us why we called her Esther. And Derek and I, when we got her and we were naming her, we just wanted a really, you know, kind of classic, you know, friendly, old-fashioned type name. And that's why we came with Esther, you know, thinking kind of the old grandma that's on the farm porch, you know, mm-hmm. That's kind of what we came to, you know, Grandma Esther, and that's how we had Esther. And somebody messaged us saying, well, you know, how'd you come up to her and explain the story? And she said, well, I'm not sure if you know this. Derek and I are not overly religious people, and so we weren't aware, but in the Jewish religion, there's a Queen Esther that, in a long story short, is credited with saving her people from a Holocaust.
Oh, my God. Oh, I just got goosebumps.
And,
wow.
Yeah. It blew my mind. And it was kind of the first time that I really, you know, said the same thing. I'm like, well, everything happens for a reason.
I was going to say, you know, everything happened. It's all kismet. It's everything happens for a reason. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
gosh.
Yeah. And that moment for me was when I knew that we had to do everything we could. I felt like, anyway, we had to do everything that we could to get the message out there. Because it did, it just feels like you kind of got something you have to do. You know, like you said, you found your reason for
being.
You
found your reason. You found your, this is your reason for, this is your existence. This is why you're here. She's your catalyst to getting where you guys needed to be. And you've touched millions of lives. You know, we're so happy to be a part of it. We're just like talking to you. And I read the book and I absolutely fell in love with her. And I fell in love with you guys. And, you know, and that's why Miss Olive chose you to be part of her favorite things. Because you've done something.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've done something that's impacted the world. And it's so great. And for those of you that want to get the book, it's a New York Times bestseller. It's received all kinds of awards. Again, it's Esther the Wonder Pig, Changing the World One Heart at a Time. And the cover girl is absolutely beautiful, I have to tell you. She's very photogenic. And you can get it. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, iBooks, Kobo, or probably available through your website, I'm sure. EstherTheWonderPig.com, but it's
in Target, we found out.
Is it in Target? Oh, my God, because it's in paperback now, and the photos are gorgeous in it. I got to tell you, it's written. I know there's a lot of stuff in the book that we've been talking about today, but it's written with a really light air. It's very light. It's very uplifting, very inspiring. And I got to tell you, from when you start the book to when you end the book, it's going to change your life in some way. I'm telling you, it is, everybody. So you got to get the book and you got to go find Esther. So go to EstherTheWonderPig.com and also go to her Facebook page. You're going to be really happy you did. So, Steve, I have to thank you. You're wonderful. Tell Derek and Esther we said hi. And to all of the animals out there, please send Miss Olive and I's love. You guys are awesome. You're possum.
I sure will. All right. Thank you so, so much. It was such a pleasure.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we'll Thank be back you. In Bye-bye. Just a moment. Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, Doggy Diva Show listeners. Susan Marie here to take just a half a minute to let you know how much we appreciate your being with us every week to hear great dog tips you can use with your pet, some great stories about rescues, fostering, and some heartwarming stories about second chances for pets who are now in loving forever homes. Be sure to go to our website, thedoggydiva.com, to see pictures of Miss Olive and other dogs we talk about on the show and get to know us a little better. That's thedoggydiva.com, D-O-G-G-Y. We appreciate your feedback, too. Okay, let's get back to the show. Up next, tips to keep your pets safe if caught in a fire emergency.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Kim Gablin, Senior Marketing Manager at Bill Jack Foods, and we are here to talk about National Pet Fire Safety Day. Hey, Kim, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. This is a very important day, and you have some great tips, so I think we should just get right into this.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if everyone knows about National Pet Fire Safety Day, but it was established back in July 15th of 2009. And basically, the AKC and ADT security systems kind of put this together because they felt it was really important for people to know about it. Not just the fact that, you know, you want to be safe during a fire with your pets, but also the fact that the National Fire Protection Association estimates that almost 1,000 pets a year accidentally cause fires in homes.
Wow.
So, you know, it's not just that you want to be safe when you have a fire that you know, something's caused in the house, but when your pet might accidentally start one as well.
That's interesting.
So, yeah. You don't necessarily think about that, but yeah. I guess, you know, there's actually a very high number of fires that are started with pets with cooking, right. Or something on the stove where they might've jumped up on the counter, or, you know, maybe turned a dial, you know, one of the stove top buttons.
Yes.
And actually turned on the stove and then accidentally started that fire that way. So it's a good reminder to us, you know, to think about how do we be safe with our pets around the things that we do normally in the house and also when there's a fire.
Wow. That's great. That's a great tip. And you know, Kim, a lot of people keep their dogs gated in their kitchen. Like they gate, you know, a lot of their homes
or
they have the carpeting throughout the house. So they'll gate their pets in their kitchen. And you're right. They have the dolls on the stove.
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, and you know, I know sometimes some stoves don't have, you know, any kind of a button or any kind, you know, any kind of a valve on it anymore. So, you know, again, you have to think about, you know, sometimes we can just press a little button on the electric top and then be able to hold that down. And then that kind of locks the stove. So you may be able to lock your stove top, or you may be able to remove the buttons if you're leaving your dog, especially when you have a bigger dog. You know, you and I have smaller dogs.
Yes.
And so they're probably not going to get up there and do that. But if you do have a larger dog, they may accidentally be looking for things up on the counter and be able to, you know, knock that off and be able to maybe start something that you weren't interested in. You know, certainly, you know, looking for the ways you can remove the hazards from your pets is going to be really important. So, you know, things like candles. You know, I know a lot of my friends, they don't use regular candles anymore. A lot of times they're using the flameless candles. And so then you don't have a dog who's going to maybe, you know, knock a candle off the table and start a fire, or accidentally light themselves on fire, right? If their tail gets in the fire and they burn themselves. And so there's making sure that you have those candles up above is, you know, great, up on counters where they can't reach, or again, changing to a flameless candle. I think there's so many options these days, but I think that that's a really good idea as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that alerting firefighters you know, that your home is one that has pets is really key. So, you know, I know that there's a lot of window clings out there. I know that some of the stores out there sell the window clings, you know, a couple of bucks each. Some of the security systems do give them away free to be able to put them on there. And then you can put down like how many dogs and cats and maybe even other pets you have in the house to be able to put those like on the windows in the front of the house or by the entrances of all of the doors into your house so that if a firefighter does need to go into your house, that they'll know how many pets there are and if they can potentially help save their lives.
You know what I got, Kim? And this is really interesting because I always feel those window clings, you can't have enough on the, and they sell them, you know, in a lot of the pet stores. But I actually was at a, you know, like a, one of the, like a pet fair. And the, you know, the stakes that you put in, like if you have a security system, you put it in the front of your house. I bought a stake and it was a, an alert to say how many pets I have in my house. On the back of it, it said how many pets you have in a house. And it says that for the, you know, for the first responders to get into the house, this is how many pets I have in my house.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I've never seen one again. So if anyone has them out there, please let us know.
Well, and it sounds like that's a great idea. You know, you could even put something together like that yourself, right? You could, you know, you could take a little, you know, wire, you know, kind of, a little wire that you can buy probably at, you know, one of the home improvement stores, and then be able to put, you know, maybe a, you know, something like a laminated, you know, piece of paper on there that has all of your pets' names on it. So I'm sure that there's ways that you could probably create one at home without too much expense as
Absolutely.
Well, which I think would be good. And they'll see it when they get up to the house, right?
You don't have
to
worry about it. And that's why I have it right up in the front by just before my bushes, so everybody sees that.
Yeah,
forget the
that.
Alarm for the house. This is what I want you to see first.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. And, you know, another idea is to keep the, make sure that you're, you know, you've got your pet's license and tags, you know, their identification tags on their collar, so that if in the need, you know, in the, if they do get away from the house, if something happens and the doors are open and they run out of the house, that you'll be able to have somebody find them and be able to return them to you. You know, you don't think about if something happens and, you know, they're breaking down doors and they're trying to get into the house, and the pets may leave, right? Your dog or cat may run out. So certainly with your dog, you want to make sure that they have their tag, and their ID tag and or license on them so that at least someone can help identify them in that
Absolutely.
Case.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, also when you leave the house, you know, think about where does your dog stay during the day when you're gone? You know, if you crate your dog, you may want to think about keeping them near a door. So, you know, our dog is in the laundry room just off of the garage. And so it's real easy to get in the house theoretically, right, and grab them, as opposed to like having them be down the basement farther away from a door. So you want to make sure that, you know, if you keep them in the house, if you can keep them at a place that's closer to your front door or back door where someone's most likely to enter in case of an emergency, that they'll be able to get them out of there pretty quickly.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talk about it for all of us, right, about checking our smoke detectors and changing the batteries. But, you know, when was the last time you changed the battery? You know, if you can't remember when the last time was, it's probably been too long. So you know, get up on that ladder, you know, change that battery because, you know, it's not going to stop the fire. But the more time you and your dog have to get out of the house, the better off you are, right? So making sure those detectors are working is really, really critical.
Which we should be doing regularly anyway.
right. But, you know, but if it's not incentive, you know, just for you, then of course you'll think about your dog and your cat. You'll think that you should do it for them as well.
Incentive.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, another key thing is having a family plan for when an emergency happens. So, you know, I know that we practice, you know, I've got a younger daughter, and so we practice a couple times to go outside and, like, how do we get out? Who's going to get the dog? Who's going to get the cat? Who needs to find the pets, right? How are we going to do that if we can during that emergency? And, you know, one of the critical things, Susan, is I think a lot of people don't always, you know, always think about it before an emergency, but where does your dog or cat like to hide? So if you know that when your dog is upset or concerned that they run to their crate or they maybe go behind the couch or into one of the particular bedrooms, then you'll also know that in the case of an emergency, they may be upset and they may try to hide from you just because of all the commotion that's going on.
Exactly.
So it's important to think about where might they be so you can get them in case of that emergency.
I'm writing these things down.
Because you don't think about it, especially with cats. I know that I had a cat that that hid. I mean, we had a pet sitter that came to the house. She changed. She put the food out for the cat. She knew where the dogs were. But she didn't even know I had a cat for, you know, until like the third or fourth time she pet sat for us because the cat never came out.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely mm-hmm. a cat thing. But I know a couple of dogs that maybe are very concerned, you know, very maybe a little skittish, or you know, again, you're having loud noises. There's sirens. There's banging. You know, things are being knocked down. So it may be kind of a scary event. Obviously, they can't see because of the smoke. So again, it's important to know where they might hide because that's the first place that you might want to look when all of this kind of gets started. Because again, you want to get out safely and you want to try to get them out safely with you as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, the last but not least, I think it's great to keep a leash near the entrance to your home or in the garage or, you know, by the door that you tend to go out. Because then once you grab your dog, you might want to be able to just hook them up on a leash. You know, you're going to get outside. If you have a big dog, it's going to be hard to hang on to them. You don't want them to run away during all of the commotion and everything. So being able to have an extra leash by the door is really kind of helpful because then you can make sure that when you get outside, you can then just grab that leash on your way out, and then you can make sure that they're safe while you're tending to all the other things that might be going on in case of this kind of an emergency.
Wow, those are really great tips, and they're very invaluable. I wrote down so many of them because I have a lot that I use for my emergency kit because we have hurricanes down here, but these are great to have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we've had so many wildfires down here also. You know, these are things mm-hmm. that you really need to be cognizant of. And with today being National Pet Fire Safety Day, it's something that you'd really need to be aware of. So these are great, great tips. And speaking of great tips, what do we have coming up at Bill Jack with Bill Jack Foods?
We've got some pretty exciting things that we're just launching. We have a new product called Picky No More dry dog food. And so it's a great dog food if you have a picky dog. It's made with chicken liver. And we all know dogs love chicken liver. Mm. So that's something that you might want to check out. We also have a new small breed senior dry dog food. That's really great to check out. And then we have some new wet food called Pate Platters. That's a Pate 13-ounce dog food. And we have some breakthrough biotics, probiotic food spray, right? A great way to give your dog probiotics every day. So we have some pretty exciting things out there that are coming out. So so go to our website at billjack.com and check out all of our new stuff and give us a call if you have any questions about it.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot coming out. And this probiotic food spray, I'm very excited about that. That's that I'm really looking to get into and find out more about. And Miss Olive's pretty excited about that too.
Yeah, we've been getting really great feedback on it. So I think you'll be excited. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, I'm going to have to let you know about that next time we talk. So, and for those who want to learn more, they can go to billjack.com. And also you have that great newsletter. I always talk about it. How can people go find out more about that?
Yeah, if you look on our website at billjack.com, you can join our Best Friends Club. And then you'll be able to get, we just send it out once a month. And it's great. It has tips and information, videos on training, and you can also request a coupon for our food or treats each month. So it's a great way to be able to kind of get some new and interesting tips about taking care of your dog.
And to get into the Bill Jack family.
Indeed, indeed.
Well, as always, I have to thank you, Kim. You've got great tips and very, very important information on how to celebrate and be aware of National Pet Fire Safety Day, which is today. On that note, I hope that everyone took great notes like I did so that we'll be aware, get our kit together, and be on our way. So, and hurry up and go out, get your Bill Jack treats too, and get your, I'm going to get this probiotic spray. I'll have to let you know how it goes.
That sounds good. Well, good luck. And good luck to everyone out there. Practice your family plan today. If you can spend 10 minutes to do that. And also be sure to check those batteries in your smoke detectors so you can be safe on National Pet Fire Safety Day.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kim. And have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We would like to thank our guests this week. And also, as our doggy divas always say, please love your pets because they love you unconditionally. And please remember to adopt, foster, spay, neuter, and microchip. And as always, please have a great Diva Week, everyone.
That's all for this episode of The Doggy Diva Show. To find out more, go to our website, thedoggydiva.com. Also, find us on our Facebook page, The Doggy Diva Show, and tell your fellow dog lovers about it. Don't miss Susan Marie, Miss Olive, and the Doggy Divas right here for the next episode. See you again soon.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.